This is a really terrible passage in terms of the passage of law, in terms of justice. It's just an awful chapter in history. You see what's happening here and you just cry out over and over again, that's just wrong. It's just terrible what happens. And the key puppet master, the one who's pulling all the strings in this chapter here, is the man Pilate. Pilate is the man who, at least in theory, has the power. He's the one who's making everything happen. The context is the Praetorium, which is the Roman house of power in Jerusalem. It's where the governor, the Roman governor of the Jews lived, and it's where if there was a judgment that needed to happen, a serious judgment, that's where the judgment would occur. And Pilate is the judge, the one with authority. And in this chapter, you see Pilate acting in a terrible way. But Pilate is not the only one acting in a terrible way. In fact, you see three different groups acting towards Jesus in a way which is totally unjust. He never deserved it. And they're all slightly different. We're just going to look at three different groups of people. One's the soldiers, and they really are mockers. They respond to Jesus by mocking. Then look at the Jews, and they are haters. They respond to Jesus with just pure hatred. And then there's Pilate. And Pilate's what we would call a pragmatist. He just wants the hard decisions to go away. He just wants to do the easiest thing possible, even though he's the judge. So here's the first group in this chapter. They're dealing with Jesus, the Son of God, the one who made the winds and the waves stop, who healed people who are blind and people who had leprosy, who never did anything wrong, and this is what the soldiers did. The soldiers, Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. Now don't imagine Pilate holding a whip. Imagine Pilate handing over Jesus to the soldiers and the soldiers just taking out all their brutality and hatred and mocking on Jesus. And you see what they did here. They took him, they beat him with this whip, this scourging. They opened up his back in ribbons of red blood and skin. And then they said, "You say that you're king of the Jews?" They took a crown of thorns, they took a string of thorns, they twisted it into a circle, plunged it down onto his head. And then they said, "You say you're a king, we'll put a robe of purple on you, because the kings would wear fancy garments and robes." Said, "Yeah, who are you now? Are you really the king?" And then they hit him. In another part of scripture, we're told they hit him and said, "Go on, tell us who hit you." They were mocking the king. They were mocking Jesus, Lord of the universe. Now, can you imagine that these soldiers would have mocked God, the king, if they understood just how much power Jesus had? These soldiers had no understanding that Jesus was a powerful, the most powerful man in all the universe. Can you imagine that they would have done that to Jesus if they had really fully appreciated just how much love and mercy Jesus had shown? They had no understanding of his power. They had no appreciation of his love. In fact, if I was thinking about these soldiers, I think of them as thoughtless. I think of them as self-confident. I actually think of them as bullies. They've been given the freedom to just impose themselves on someone who appears to be weak, and like a pack of dogs on a weak dog, they just go to town as hard as they can, saying, "Do you really have the power? No, we've got the power. Look at us. We're whipping you. We're beating you. We're mocking you." Have you ever seen someone mock God? Think about it. Have you ever seen someone, heard someone speak about God, just talking about God as though God could actually do nothing? Have you ever heard of someone who just bravely challenges God and says, you know what, if God's real, let him come down right now and show me. If God's real, let him do this right now. And what they're doing is they're actually mocking God. Some people say, if God's real, then, you know, let him stop me in my tracks right now. And they think by having spoken out against God and the fact that God doesn't hit them with a lightning bolt then and there, that they have challenged God and won. Have you ever heard or seen someone speak that way? You know, there was a man, I think it was Sigmund Freud. We won't go into Sigmund Freud. I think it was Sigmund Freud who once said that he was the greatest enemy of God. And he once said, you know, if I ever meet God and God says to me, why didn't you believe? I'll just say to him, not enough evidence. He challenged God. And God didn't strike him down with a lightning bolt then and there. But in the end, where is he now? Where's that confident bravado? Where's that challenge to God? Because God and Jesus is not playing a short game here. He's not saying, I'm going to show you what it is right now. He's got a longer purpose in mind. And here you have the most powerful man, the Son of God, in all the universe, who has told Peter when he's in the garden, put your sword away because I could call down 12 legions of angels if they wanted to protect me, if I needed to be saved. But then what? Then everything that's in the Old Testament wouldn't be fulfilled. It's not about now. It's not about beating these soldiers now. It's about what I have to do. And what Jesus came to do was to die for our sins on the cross. He wasn't thinking about the here and the now. I used to think, as a kid, even as a young teenager, when I was thinking about Jesus in this garden, being challenged, you know, why didn't he do it? Why didn't he just say, you know what, you're challenging me, am I God? Yes, I am. And just call the angels down. And that would have shown them. I mean, you think about the movies. You think about where there's that guy who seems to be a bit weak and he's getting beaten up by these muggers in the street. And you know what? They don't really know that he's a kung fu master. And he takes a couple of hits, but then he beats them and it's all gone. And they run away screaming and he's taught them a lesson. And then they know you don't mess with this guy. Maybe. And you just want that to happen right now in this story. But it doesn't. And it always used to confuse me. But it's because Jesus had a job to do. And his job, which he performed out of love, was to die on the cross to shed his blood so that we could be saved. He wasn't going to show his power just now. He was going to show his power on the cross and being raised from the dead. I want to challenge you. Are you comfortable with the fact that Jesus was weak? Are you comfortable with the fact that Jesus actually had to die for you to be saved? Or when you look at Jesus dying on the cross, do you think, you know what? That's not the way I want God to be. And you end up being like these mockers who say, I'm more powerful than that. I would have said something. I would have done something. Don't mock God. And just remember, God is playing the long game. God has not got just the immediate answer, your answer in mind right now. People mocked Jesus because they didn't understand just how powerful he was. People now mock Jesus because they don't understand, perhaps you don't understand, just how powerful Jesus is. That's not the only bit, though, is it? I mean, you look at you look at the Jews here, and they're not really like the soldiers. The soldiers are not really invested in Jesus all that much. They're willing to mock him because they don't understand much about Jesus. But have a look at the Jews. You see, Jesus here has been beaten and humiliated, and Pilate's trying to play the political game. He knows that this man isn't guilty, and so he's trying to just get out of crucifying him, and he hopes that having humiliated Jesus, beaten him to within a whisker of his life, put a crown of thorns on his head and paraded him in robe, he can bring him out to the Jews. And he does that, and verse 5 he says, then Jesus came out, Pilate said, behold, I am bringing him out to you, verse 4, that you may know that I find no fault in him, brings out the bloodied mess that is Jesus, and says to them, behold the man. And you know what he's hoping for right now? He's hoping that all the Jews at this point will just say, yeah, serves you right. Serves you right. Be in your way. You deserve to be a bloodied mess. But instead, the Jews aren't satisfied with just mocking Jesus. Look at what they say. They see Jesus' bloodied head and back and mocked, and they just say, crucify him. It's not enough for him to be humiliated. He has to be killed. Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate says, you take him and crucify him. I find no fault in him. I've already beaten him to within a whisker of his life anyway. They says, no. You Romans, you've said we're not allowed to crucify him. You take him and crucify him because in our law it says that he should be crucified. Why? Why do they hate him so much? Because, verse 7, this is why we hate him. This is why we've got to get rid of him. Because he made himself the Son of God. See, Jesus wasn't just a teacher, and he never just claimed to be a teacher. Jesus claimed to be the Son of God, and then he backed it up by stopping the winds and the waves. He backed it up by healing a blind man who had never seen. He backed it up by healing a leper. He backed it up by healing a lame man who had never walked. Jesus said, I am the way to God. Come through me. He made himself the Son of God. Now, for that, the Jews felt that they had to kill him. They hated him for saying that. And you know, there are a lot of people like that in the world, and maybe it's even you. Maybe it's even you. A lot of people are happy with the person of Jesus. They like the idea of Jesus who came and preached, Jesus who came and talked about loving your fellow neighbour, Jesus who came and healed, Jesus who died a sacrificial death, even. But they're not happy with the idea that Jesus is God. But that's exactly why Jesus was murdered, because he claimed to be God. You see, if Jesus is a wise man, it's different from the way that you have to respond to Jesus being God. You see, if Jesus is a wise man, then you know what you have to do? You have to listen to him. And that's true. But if Jesus is God, you have to obey him. If Jesus is a wise man, then you get to sit and listen and you get to judge Jesus. If Jesus is a wise man, you judge Jesus. You say, you know, what you're saying is pretty good. I like that. I didn't like that other bit, though. You judge Jesus. But if Jesus is God, then Jesus judges you. Jesus gets to tell you what's right, what's wrong, how to live your life, what's important and what's not important. And that's why the Jews hated him. Because Jesus claimed, Jesus even backed up that he was God, the Son of God. Jesus was murdered because he claimed to be God. Some people say, you know what, I don't mind Jesus. I quite like Jesus. I certainly don't hate him. But I don't really believe he's God. Well, If that's what you think, the only reason why you don't hate him is because you're not really listening to him. Because Jesus clearly said, I am the Son of God. I am the way, the truth, and the life. If you don't believe in God, if you don't believe in Jesus, that Jesus is God, but you don't hate Jesus, it's really only because you're not listening to Jesus. But the Jews had heard enough. They hated him, and they wanted to kill him. It was not enough for Jesus to be humiliated. And then you've got Pilate, the pragmatist. Pilate, the one who just wants everything to go away. You know, Pilate was a wealthy man. Pilate was an important man. And if there's trouble amongst the Jews, then Caesar or one of Caesar's men is going to come and they're going to say to him, you know, you've got to do something about this. And if he doesn't do anything significant about it straight away, then he could lose his important position as governor of Judah, and it's not good. So he just wants everything to be calm, smooth. And he's tried that already. He's tried to say, look, I've humiliated him, let him go. And they've said, no, crucify him. But when Jesus says, when they say he made himself the Son of God, he goes, wait, whoa, who am I dealing with here? And he goes back in to talk to Jesus. He says, who are you? Where have you come from? Man, you have got some big claims. And Jesus doesn't answer him. And Pilate says this really interesting thing. He says, you'd better speak to me because I'm the one in control here. Look at verse 10. He says, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? He thinks he's got the power. But, you know, Jesus spoke to him. Jesus said to him, you know, you're not the one who has the power. This power has been given to you because there is one above who is more powerful than you. I think that this is actually talking about God himself. That God himself has given you the power to do this, to fulfill a purpose, and that's why I'm not speaking to you. That's why I'm not defending myself right now. And Pilate's just totally confused, and Jesus is a unique man, and he knows that there's something that he doesn't want to do, and that's to have Jesus killed. And so he redoubles his effort to just make the situation go away without killing Jesus. And you look at what he does, it says, verse 12, from then on, I don't mean for the next 3 days, it means, you know, for the next hour or two, Pilate sought to release him. That is, maybe he's gone back outside to negotiate with the Jews. You know, so there's nothing wrong with this guy, just he's been whipped and scourged, let him go. And they say to him this, listen, they know how to play a political game here. Say, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Pilate's been appointed by Caesar, you know, the lord of the whole empire, emperor. If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend, because whoever makes himself a king, Jesus has said, I am king of the Jews, speaks against Caesar. You know what they're saying to him? They're saying, if you don't crucify him, we're going to go and say to Caesar that there was a fellow who called himself the king of the Jews and you didn't do anything about it. And you know this cushy job which you've got here in Judea, this nice palace that you have, all this regiment that you have, it's going to be taken away. At that point, Pilate makes a decision. Jesus has to die. He has to die. But he does it in a way which is really going to rub it in. He's going to make his point, and it's also going to rub it in the noses of the Jews. Okay, because he does this really officially now. He says, when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he's made a decision, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat. We are making it official now. There's a specific throne room for the governor of Judah. And he sits down in the judgment seat. bring out Jesus. And then he says to these Jews, you Jews, behold your king. I think he's actually angry at them by this time, because he's making them do something that he doesn't want to do. And so he's going to rub their face, and it says, you Jews, you are nothing. Behold your king, and this is what I'm going to do to your king. Shall I crucify your king? And they said, yes. We don't care about anything else, not even the pride of our nation now. Crucify our king. And so they took him away to be crucified. You know what Pilate did? Pilate got one up on the Jews, and at the same time, he made sure that he showed to Caesar that he was loyal to Caesar. And why? He didn't think that Jesus possessed any real power. Just like the soldiers, they didn't think that Jesus possessed any real power. Just like the Jews, they didn't believe that Jesus possessed any real power. They didn't trust Jesus. I mean, the soldiers, they were strong, violent bullies. The chief priests, what were they doing? They were just defending their nation, and they hated Jesus for setting himself up as more important than the nation. Pilate's the one with the power to crucify. They all thought that they had the power, every single one of them. The soldiers, the Jews, Pilate. But there is one man in the praetorium in that day who was in control, and it was Jesus. It was Jesus. You know, in this life, people, maybe you, often continue self-confidently when life is good, because they think that they are strong and confident. They think that they're the ones with the power. And sometimes God really shakes those people up. Sometimes God has shaken you up in your life and shown you that you are not the one with the power in this world. And here, everyone in the praetorium thought that they had the power, but it was Jesus with the power. And I want you to remember what Jesus said in verse 11. You could have no power unless it was given to you from above. It may not look like it right now, but Jesus is in control. Just like in the praetorium, it didn't look like it then, but Jesus was in control. It may not look like God is working out his plan, but God is right now working out his plan. Just like in the praetorium, God was working out his plan. Even when it doesn't look like God has power, he has that power. We're told that it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But what Jesus supplies to you and to me is the hope that we can face God, that we can submit to God without him having to show you in your life that he's the one who has the power and not you, in a really hard way. So what do we take out of all of this? I would ask you to submit to Jesus, even though in this passage it doesn't look like Jesus is powerful. I would ask you to trust Jesus, even though in your life right now, perhaps it seems like Jesus doesn't have much control of your life. I would ask you to believe in Jesus because he was willing to die for your sin, and to love Jesus because he was willing to give himself and sacrifice himself even when he didn't have to, even when he had the power to get out of there. And that's the Saviour that I want to present to you. Not just the King of the world, but the one who was willing to die as well as and serve the world, as well as judge the world when the day comes. So please think about that. We're going to come and sing one last song.